This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Julian Ng here with me. How are you doing, Jules? Good morning.
I'm good. Good morning.
Yeah, 6 o'clock on Wednesday. We've got a whole lineup, an exciting lineup for you in the next 4 hours today. Chuang, Kusu Chuang, will be speaking to Lau Chin Guan of Adventa Berhad. He's the CEO of Adventa, which, you know, it's a bit of a troubled company. It was a PN17 company previously, and they were in the glove-making business, and they've staged a bit of a turnaround since they've gone from glove manufacturing to the medical equipment in the healthcare space. Mm-hmm. So what's been a period of financial difficulty, they've managed to turn their fortunes around. So good on them. They're going to come on the breakfast grill at 8 o'clock.
You know, Malaysians are some of the world's biggest glove manufacturers. We control almost 80% of the market. So I guess they are getting away from the competition because you have the likes of, you know, Top Glove, Supermax, Hartaliga, and so on in that space. And somebody like Supermax also diversifying into things like contact lenses, you know. So I guess sometimes it's a case of just selling to the same clients because you are servicing the medical clients. Adding, you know, why not add some contact lenses to the gloves, to the billions, tens of billions of gloves. In fact, hundreds of billions of gloves you're already selling into that market.
Well, Adventa is now in the business of making parts for home renal dialysis machines. You know, my dad, at the end, towards the end, he was going full-time for dialysis treatments. I mean, we're talking about every other day having to make that trip. And, you know, it's such a... It was a real strain on the family and resources having to make that trip, you know, arranging for transport and staying with him during the time of dialysis. So, but then home dialysis machines were far too expensive. I mean, it wasn't even an option, right? So perhaps this is the way Adventa is seeing home healthcare in the future. When you talk about like private healthcare, now you're thinking about setting up, your personal healthcare at home.
Yeah. And what's the price difference? Do you know?
Massive. It's a huge difference, I think, to be able to afford a home dialysis machine. But perhaps they're thinking about making this mass, you know, making kind of mass produce this and making it cheaper and more affordable. So we'll have to find out more with CEO Lau Chin Guan of Adventa Berhad and their plans for the healthcare industry. So stay tuned for that 8:05 this morning. And after that, we have current affairs. And recently, the Cambodia Daily, which is a newspaper there, they reported on alleged abuse cases at the Penang Juru Detention Centre. After these allegations came out, the Home Ministry denied it. But still, I mean, that hasn't done much to allay concerns about the conditions of our local detention centres. There's been quite a number of reports coming out. You know, Amnesty International came out with a report saying that we don't actually comply with the UN's standard minimum rules for treatment of prisons, which, you know, talks about how you have to have a standard basic minimum of, you know, living conditions, personal hygiene, food and medical services, and all that. So
yeah, I think that Malaysia has been a hotbed of. It's a center for refugees when they get out of countries like Vietnam and Cambodia. And I've not heard a lot about Cambodian refugees. I mean, I've heard a lot about, you know, Vietnamese in the past, in Myanmar more recently. But the Cambodians, why are they getting out of Cambodia?
I don't know, looking for a better life. I think this is just perhaps more of an economic refugee, you know, moving on to other places. However, you know, it reminded me of an article that I read about the US condition. The US prisons are made private, so they're run by private corporations.
A lot of them, yeah.
Yeah, and now there's a huge debate in the US talking about whether this is in fact the right move. I mean, privatization of prisons has caused a lot of problems.
Yeah, they want to separate the profit-making motive because the conditions for the prisoners are atrocious. So they want to make sure that the prisoners have at least a little bit more of a semblance of dignity in a state-run prison. But in the first place, the state outsource these prison operations to private operators because they didn't have enough money to take care of them anyway. So I'm not sure how this is going to be panned out, because I think America is one of the highest incarcerated countries, country with the most prisoners in the world.
Mm.
You contrast that to a country like Norway, who really put their prisoners into hotel-like conditions, right? So it's very different the way we treat prisoners. One is for retribution, and in a place like Norway, is actually for rehabilitation.
But, you know, I think it's a really hard sell, right? How do you convince taxpayers that, you know, you want to use their hard-earned money to essentially fund prisoners, right? So, you know, to keep prisons running, to keep them running well, that's using taxpayers' money. So the rationale behind privatization of prisons, I understand, but the unintended consequences of that, no one foresaw.
I think there is a very high case of recidivism, because the U.S.
Recidivism. Where
criminals go back to the crime,
right?
And it's a very serious problem in the United States. So when that happens, it has a bearing on society anyways. It's a cost that you must take anyway. Mm. But in a country like Norway, the prisoners actually, most of them don't go back to the crime. They get to go back into society without, you know, with a very low cost
without
on society.
Without relapsing into a life of crime. Okay.
Exactly.
All right, well, that's kind of a focus on current affairs today, looking at detention facilities. And SNM show comes on at 9:35 a.m. Today, Jules, the big debate between active and passive investments.
You know how you always hear from your friend, your friendly broker and your rich uncle that, oh, I made so much money in this stock and this is what you should do. And the thing is that a lot of research has been done to say that this kind of practice is no better than just a very lazy portfolio. In fact, sometimes the active way of managing your investment is quite harmful, quite toxic to your portfolio, because you are governed by emotions and you are governed by
bad
advice and what you hear overnight on CNBC and the lateness of such news. By the time you hear such news, it has lost its advantage and you're competing among millions and millions of very sophisticated and professional investors. So active investing is thought to be overrated, which is why the rise of ETF is testament to this passive philosophy. So in the last few years, passive vehicles like ETFs have seen huge rise in fund flows and fund inflows. And the active funds, you know, all these mutual funds and other types of management like hedge funds have seen a sharp reduction in fund flows. They call this the Flomageddon, right?
Flomageddon.
Yeah.
I like that.
To depict the outflow of funds from active management into passive.
Oh.
So we're gonna talk about how, you know, we're going to discuss this.
Gosh, that's
S&M.
Really interesting. I mean, is this the, in a small way, kind of I don't know whether it's a trend or a disruptor, but, you know, it's something to be paying attention to.
It's certainly a disruptor and a trend as well.
Fantastic. Well, let's find out more on the S&M show, 9:35 a.m. today. But first, a quick look at the news. So the Royal Malaysian Police, or PDRM, now they've come out to say, and they've said this recently, that they want to make technology application a priority in order to maximise manpower usage in monitoring and curbing crime. So we're talking things like installing CCTVs, a lot more CCTVs, and using drones for surveillance.
Wow.
Yeah. So just to quote PDRM in a comment they made, this year we will be using drones to enable surveillance over larger areas and at the same time reduce costs. There's also no necessity for our policemen to do round-the-clock patrols. What do you think, Jules?
I think we have a serious security problem, and any measures to tackle that kind of thing would be welcome, I suppose. But would you be worried about privacy issues?
Yeah, so I was really struggling with this story because, you know, I thought, okay, there's good and bad here, right? So fewer opportunities for street level crime. You know, you have CCTV cameras, you've got maybe surveillance, and you're thinking, okay, maybe I feel a bit safer walking on the streets, being watched. You know, I'm being watched. I don't need to have a police. I don't know, there's something about the presence of law enforcement that freaks me out. Like, I think there's something to worry about. I'm not used to seeing a lot of law enforcement patrolling the streets. I think you know, immediately think there's something wrong with this area.
Yeah.
I also see it as a potential way of reducing the police force. I mean, that's a good thing, right? You wanna streamline, make it lean and mean, mm-hmm. fighting machine. But I don't know, then the whole privacy thing comes into play.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing is also the fact that a lot of street level crimes are economic in nature and economic in cause. Like, you can trace back the level of street crimes to that kind of thing, right? So I'm just wondering if there is a better policy to really do something about the economy. I know that the whole world is trying to do that to spur growth. You know, places like Japan, Europe, and even the US, they're trying very hard to bring about some sort of economic growth. Mm. Now, if we can do that, then we can at least contain the crime a little bit. And also, what kind of examples are we getting from our leaders, right? So I think that's one thing. That is a big crime that can't be solved by CCTVs.
Yeah.
How do you stem corruption and leakages? Because a lot of money is lost to that. Now, if that money was diverted to the people, how far does that go in reducing crime rates?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you're talking about the correlation between the state of the economy with crime and, you know, governance, good governance all around. For me, I also, you know, when I think about this story about drones and CCTVs, I think, well, what about the flip side, right? Maybe you should then strap on a camera to cops too, so we can see what they're up to. You know, rather than I feel like I'm the one being watched, I can also watch what you're doing as you are patrolling the streets of KL. Okay, let's. In other news, I also saw this quite interesting piece from Zoo Negara. They say that they do not plan to extend the period to keep Nuan Nuan, which is the baby of the panda couple Xing Xing and Liang Liang of China. And they say they may send, I'm not sure whether there's a him or a her, but they may send this baby back after next year due to the high cost of maintenance that was by keeping this baby panda. Do you realize, Jules, that we have to pay a rental cost to keep this panda?
Yeah.
2.4 million ringgit is how much we have to pay to rent this baby panda.
And also an insurance premium. Pandas also need insurance of 200,000 ringgit.
I think that's more than my coverage.
I'm not sure why. So I really don't understand this, but I'm just wondering what effect it had on the numbers of Zoo Negara. And really, this raises the question of what exactly is Zoo Negara, therefore. When was the last time you visited Zoo Negara?
Many years ago, but I remember being pleasantly surprised going there. I had a good time and I thought, okay, well, I don't like zoos. I feel very uncomfortable looking at animals in captivity. But I took a nephew of mine and he had a good time and we had a good day out. So I thought it was okay. It was an okay experience. Zoo Negara was better than I expected. However, this is 2.4 million, Jules. That's a lot of money clearly being funded by the government, right? And taxpayers' money.
I think it's a lot of money, and I think it's a good move to return these panda. I think China has this panda diplomacy mm-hmm. going on, where they send pandas all around the world with the hope that it improves relation. But China is now agitating as well in South China Sea, right? Giving pandas to us doesn't really solve that.
So if we return this baby panda, is that like a faux pas, like a diplomatic faux pas?
I don't think so, because we've kept it for a year. So that's good enough to fulfill that social requirement to keep something from your guests. But also the bigger idea of keeping zoos, I'm uncomfortable with the idea of zoos, because you are keeping these animals in captivity just for the entertainment of human beings. I'm not sure if there is a better way to do zoos, especially if you do one in Malaysia. I'm just wondering if the process is more well thought out. I mean, I've visited zoos in Singapore. The zoo in Singapore is just amazing.
Really,
right?
I've never been.
Especially if you have the chance, try to go to the night safari. It's a really amazing experience. But more and more, I think we have to really assess the need for zoos. I think if you did build a zoo, it should be for some kind of conservation where the animals have to, you know, the population of the animals are dwindling, a lot of endangered species around. So the idea of the zoo now should be to, let's say, protect the animal and to ensure that the species continue rather than pure entertainment for human beings.
Also, in the Philippines, now in the past couple of days, there's been several news reports flying around trying to estimate the death toll of the number of people who've been killed during the crackdown on illegal drugs in the Philippines. So now you've got the head of the Philippines police coming out to say that more than 1,900 people have been killed as part of this war on drugs that President Rodrigo Duterte launched when he came to office 7 weeks ago. 1,900 people in 7 weeks comes up to about 36 killings a day.
That's mind-boggling.
I know.
And I saw an interview between with President Duterte on the, I think it was in CNN a few days ago, and he said he as much said as this is a trade-off. This 1,900 people being killed is a trade-off for the hundreds of thousands of people that die from drug abuse and the drug menace. Because it's not just the abusers, it's also the whole industry of making and distributing drugs. It's very crime related. So
right.
He's doing this numbers game and in a way playing God on people's lives. And I'm not sure what to make of it because the drug problem is also very serious. Mm. But vigilantism to kill people at will is also kind of scary because it doesn't go through the court, the due process of the courts.
Yeah, I think we have to take this with some context. You're right that people living in the Philippines have had to deal with the problem of drugs and the crime and the ecosystem that drugs creates, right? So I'm really struggling with this story, and I'm going to keep an eye on this story to see what kind of developments. It's easy to critique from the outside, but what is it like to live in the Philippines amid this, right? 6:17 right now. We'll be back with more news, so stay tuned in the Morning Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning. I'm Melissa Idris. You're listening to The Morning Run. I've got Julian Ng here with me, 6:22 right now. And apparently Matthew McConaughey has a YouTube channel that no one seems to be watching. So despite him being really, you know, really good in movies like Interstellar and I don't know, I'm a huge fan of True Detective. I binge watched that one. It seems that no one seems to want to watch him on YouTube because he's got like an average of 370,000 views per video. That's not a lot for someone of his caliber.
But still, I would, you know, I would just take 370,000. That's quite a lot in my book.
Sure,
so,
sure.
Because
I'm no big Hollywood star.
It's still talking to about 370,000 people.
Well, this story got me thinking, and I went to check out his YouTube video. There are a couple of videos there that he's done where it's just him sitting in front of a camera and a webcam. And it made me think about this podcast I listened to that talked about the lonely web.
Mm-hmm.
The lonely web essentially is a term that was coined by Joe Vicks. He wrote about it for an article in Fusion. And it's essentially what happens to videos or videos that you post up that have no views. So people can post up videos on YouTube about random things, you know, a short snippet of, I don't know, them talking to a webcam or just like a vlog, you know, like a video diary.
Really things that nobody else would be interested in,
yeah,
except for yourself.
So these videos are really not watched. I mean, you can see that they've got very few clicks, very few views, but it's actually quite comforting to watch. So Jovex says that if you surf the lonely web, you might come across some of these videos and watch them, and it might feel a little bit comforting to you because these are genuine moments that perhaps were not meant to go viral, not meant to be watched. So in a way, it can feel a little bit voyeuristic.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that it's so easy to create spaces around the web without a lot of cost. This is very different from in a physical world where you create a space, you the costs are quite prohibitive, right? So there are all these things just loitering around the net. I think it's pretty cool that they're there, you know, and it looks like a littering to you and me, but I think it gives the internet a kind of characteristic.
It feels genuine because if you think about all the videos that, you know, the heavily produced, the makeup faces and all that, it just feels really refreshing. It feels really honest. And in a small part, I love that the internet can allow us to do that. You know, I mean, essentially you're sharing a little part of yourself. Sometimes I come across these videos and I wonder, what on earth are people thinking, right? Who would watch this? Why would you put this up? Like, for what purpose? Do you think this is going to sell? Do you think this is going to make you famous? But then now that I think about it, I think it's really wonderful that people can do that. You have a platform to do that and be vulnerable.
How many hours have you spent watching these videos?
I have to say, sometimes I do. I do surf the lonely web when I'm lonely.
It's seriously
weird.
Melissa?
It's weird. When I feel like I'm, you know, I need a break from work or just from all the overexposure that social media does, right? So sometimes I just want to go and see something honest and genuine and refreshing. It's a rabbit hole, Jules. You fall into this rabbit hole.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I'm usually quite impatient with video unless it's so captivating. Then I'll just watch the whole thing. But usually when I watch a video on YouTube or anywhere, especially YouTube, do you know they have this function to speed up the video?
No.
To 1.25 times, 1.5 times, 2 times, you know, I use those different speeds for different speeds that people talk
for
in.
For videos.
For videos. If the creator is a really slow talker, then I speed it up to 2 times. So if the video goes on for 7 minutes, I finish that in 3 minutes, not counting the times where I just click on a slider to move forward, right? So I want to get to the essence of what these guys are saying very quickly, and I want to move on. I can't spend 7 minutes of my life
watching something that's just,
especially what you're talking about. It would kill
me.
But I don't mind reading because I think reading, you have a lot more control on the speed where you're consuming the content. For example, I think similar to what you're saying, a few years ago, I discovered these so-called the most boring blogs on earth, right? The dullest blogs on earth. And for some reason, it's totally comforting when I go into these blogs, and people like them as well. For example, let me read this one, which is called youmakemeyawn.blogspot.my, right? The latest post is, which is something that happened, I think, way back in, not so recent, some time back, last year, I think. Mm-hmm. I felt guilty is the title. When I killed an ant this morning, it's a living being after all. But I guess what? I did anyway. It's a cruel world sometimes. The second one was socks, my choices. I have a nice pair of socks, but they're too big for me. I wear them anyway because of the quality. Until today, I threw them in the trash. I'm sick of second best.
What on earth is that, Jules? Seriously, that is a waste of space, tell you.
But when you read them and you see a lot of comments, 80, 90 comments on some of these blogs, right? That's this other one called The Dullest Blog in the World. And let me read one of this, which has a lot of comments. 171 comments from the readers. Straightening the doormat. I noticed that the doormat was at a slightly crooked angle. I reached down and moved the mat back into its correct place. The edge of the mat was then perpendicular to the door.
All right, explain to me why you would speed up videos so that you won't waste time watching them, yet you would read that.
There is something so calming about these words because it's just a normal part of your life verbalized into words. And I guess it's very zen-like because it makes you a lot more conscious and aware of things that happened in your life, right? That's what you're supposed to do to get enlightenment, to be aware of your surroundings and of what you're doing.
Oh my God, do you mentally write blogs like this in your head when you walk to the door was ajar as I walked towards the bathroom?
Yeah, and you know, it's not easy to think of what to write, right? And when you want to phrase the whole boring event and put it together, I don't think it's an easy task.
I have to say, this is another side of you that I would have never guessed. What was that blog again, Jill? So is it called The Most Boring Blog on Earth?
There are two. The Dullest Blog in the World, that's www.dullestblog.com. Uh-huh. And the other one, I think it's a Malaysian one. It's youmakemeyawn.blogspot.my.
Excellent. If you want to delve the lonely web or perhaps read a couple of super boring blog posts, check those out. We've got the news bulletin now for you with Nadia Aziz on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning. We're just hanging around with you, Melissa and Julian, here in the morning run, 6:40 right now. And you know, when you go grocery shopping and you think about how much packaging we consume, right? Just everything from egg containers to mineral water bottles to jam jars, all that, that can be recycled. But what about the styrofoam that we use and all the other plastic packaging that can't be recycled? Especially that, if you think about when you buy veggie and fresh meats, they've got this kind of cling film that
cling
covers
film, that's
it, right?
It wraps it around, and apparently that's not good for food as well, because the chemicals
seep into it,
into the food.
Yeah, you're right. So the chemicals could be seeping into, the plastic chemicals could be seeping into your food. It's not even very good at preventing food spoilage. So researchers have been investigating an alternative form of food packaging. The US Department of Agriculture has now discovered edible packaging, a milk protein that called casein, that can be used to develop an edible biodegradable packaging film. So apparently this is better, 500 times better, I might add, than a plastic at keeping away oxygen from foods. So it keeps the food fresher for longer. And you can just eat it. So you don't even have to do anything. You just eat the plastic right out there.
I don't know. At first, when I thought, when I read this story, I thought that all the food would be actually stored in actual milk, right? But no, they are going to make a kind of a plastic-like wrapper from a milk protein called casein. So apparently that is a lot better than the plastic cling wraps, because they're proteins, and the proteins have a much tighter formation than plastic polymers, which allow some oxygen to get in and destroy your food. So this milk thing is supposedly a better solution than plastics.
When I read this story, Jules, the first thing that came to my mind was the, you know, the white rabbit candy. Do you remember that from our childhood?
Yes, from a long time ago.
Yeah,
yes.
So this little candy, it's white, it's got a little rabbit on it.
I was fascinated by it
because
I thought
you could eat the wrapper.
I thought I was some superhero who could ingest paper.
I know. I remember thinking to myself, I love this candy because you could eat the wrapper, and I thought it was so cool. So when I first read this story on Bloomberg no less, I thought, wait a minute. There's already a candy in Malaysia that does that. You can eat the packaging in the wrapper.
But I'm not sure if that actually preserves food, because that one seems a lot more flimsy and it's water soluble. So
yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, and is it rice paper?
Could be rice paper.
Rice paper, yeah. But I do like the idea of edible packaging or biodegradable packaging, because I for one eat a lot of takeout. I eat a lot of takeout, and I buy a lot of I don't go to the markets, I go to supermarkets, so everything is in styrofoams and cling film and plastic and all that. And as just one person, I see the amount of trash and, you know, stuff that
it's
you
horrible.
Can't recycle.
I
really see it, because that's just me. That's one person. Imagine if it was like a whole household and how much rubbish we would churn out a day.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is a kind of environmental quid pro quo, because where do you get the milk?
It's from cows. Geez.
Yeah, and if you watch there is an object to this question. If you watch Cowspiracy, right?
Cowspiracy.
Cowspiracy, that movie, and I would encourage people to watch it. I'm not sure whether the Cowspiracy is an actual conspiracy or whether it's based on verified facts, but apparently cows are the biggest polluters on Earth. Cow farming. I was shocked to learn that much bigger than car pollution, for example, or industrial pollution by many, many, many times.
It's the methane, right?
Yeah, that cow fart.
Yeah, right? That they fart and yeah, and release
and methane. Also because of the demand for food, they're clearing a lot of natural forests. So they're also cow production is also destroying natural forests, and not to mention the kind of very horrible conditions that the cows are put through. The male cows are separated from the mother
bulls,
and the veals, you know, they
cows.
Yeah, the baby cows where the male ones which can't produce any milk, they're given to the restaurant. So at a very, very young age, they're separated from the mothers. The mothers also go through depression. And you know, the milk producers, their whole life, they are basically stuck for milk production, and they live very, very depressing lives. So all those pictures that you see on milk cartons that depict happy cows, sorry to ruin your morning.
I love cows.
So where is this milk going to come from? It's going to come from somewhere. I'm not sure if it's an environmental solution, right? Compared to plastics.
I just had a thought. What if we've been drinking the milk of depressed cows? And how does that translate? So maybe if you're feeling depressed, you know, that could be a whole host of other issues. You've gotten this depression from the cow.
And also, human beings are the only animal creatures, I think I've said this before on air, that consume milk for other baby animals.
Yeah.
Right?
This is, the milk is meant for the baby cow, but we're consuming it. Yeah. You're right. On the note of the methane, how cows fart and produce a lot of methane, I also came across a really quirky article that said some farmers are now trying to, they've acknowledged the pollution that cow farming contributes to the carbon footprint. And now they're putting methane backpacks on cows to capture the farts. I know, it's really quirky. Just hear me out. So they strap little bags or gas tanks essentially onto the cows to capture the methane.
Okay.
And they use the methane for industrial production. So I thought that was very clever. But to, you know, the cost of strapping each cow with the methane backpack is
crazy.
Really quite...
It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know whether the costs would have any benefits. Profit-wise, it might take it out on the farmers.
Yeah, there are also those big buildings in China. Didn't we cover this story as well? Big machines, air pollution suckers placed around China and then recycled for energy and made into diamonds.
Extracting
carbon out of pollution and turning them into diamonds.
I can get behind that environmentally friendly effort for sure. But if you're concerned about the environment, wanting to eat right, what you can also do is stop by, if you happen to be in the US, stop by Cibo Express or Cibo Express. I'm not sure how you say
What's
it.
That?
It's chain of airport restaurants or cafes, I would say. You can pick up like a sandwich or a protein bar. But now they have a new addition to the menu, an energy bar with 40 ground up crickets. Apparently, flying off the shelves, Joel.
Delicious. I mean, it's the sous chefs that got us interested in eating raw fish, right? Many years back, because... I think too many people in the world at the time will balk at the idea of eating raw fish served to you.
Okay,
it's so expensive to go out for a sushi meal.
So I would say my mother still doesn't consider raw fish a meal. You know, I would always opt for sushi and sashimi any day of the week. Can you feed me that? But my mother still thinks, you know, she is one of those people that still balks at the idea. I probably will be balking at the idea of tortilla chips made from cricket flour, any kind of grinding insects into grains, I would probably balk at that. And, you know, that could be the way of the future. Future generations could be looking at me and saying, wow, so old-fashioned are you.
You know, Melissa, you are in the minority. When we don't eat insects, we are actually in the minority of the people, because 80% of the world practices entomophagy.
That cannot be.
Yes. If you go to Wikipedia, and Wikipedia is an authority in all these things, right? 80% of the world's nations eat 1,000 different species of insects.
In Malaysia in general, where do we eat insects as
part
of a daily cuisine?
We don't, because it's not our practice. But in Africa, in many parts of Asia, South America, North and Central America, they eat insects.
Sometimes I might eat the occasional ant that has wandered into my Milo, but
your cake or
that doesn't quite count as eating insects. So, you know, cricket flour is something that we can really be seeing on the shelves soon. It's produced by farming crickets. You freeze them, you boil them, you roast them, then you grind them into a powder. And think of how much this could mean for, you know, food security around the world, right? You're not worried about corn and grain and all that.
That's right. When your insects eat your food, you eat them back.
Okay. There you go. Where to start your morning with the morning run. It's now coming up to 6:50 a.m. on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.